Chapter 41. Leaving the favored, and well-received, and flattered of the world, him of the world most worldly, who never compromised himself by an ungentlemanly action, and never was guilty of a manly one, to lie smilingly asleep for even sleep, working but little change in his dissembling face, became with him a piece of cold, conventional hypocrisy we follow in the steps of two slow travelers on foot, making towards Chigwell. Barnaby and his mother. Grip in their company, of course. The widow, to whom each painful mile seemed longer than the last, toiled wearily along, while Barnaby, yielding to every inconstant impulse, fluttered here and there, now leaving her far behind, now lingering far behind himself, now darting into some by-lane or path and leaving her to pursue her way alone, until he stealthily emerged again, and came upon her with a wild shout of merriment, as his wayward and capricious nature prompted. Now he would call to her from the topmost branch of some high tree by the roadside. Now using his tall staff as a leaping pole, come flying over ditch or hedge or five-bar gate. Now run with surprising swiftness for a mile or more on the straight road, and halting, sport upon a patch of grass with grip till she came up. These were his delights, and when his patient mother heard his merry voice, or looked into his flushed and healthy face, she would not have abated them by one sad word or murmur, though each had been to her a source of suffering in the same degree as it was to him of pleasure. It is something to look upon enjoyment, so that it be free and wild, and in the face of nature, though it is but the enjoyment of an idiot. It is something to know that heaven has left the capacity of gladness in such a creature's breast. It is something to be assured that, however lightly men may crush that faculty in their fellows, the great Creator of mankind imparts it even to his despised and slighted work. Who would not rather see a poor idiot happy in the sunlight, than a wise man pining in a darkened jail? Ye men of gloom and austerity, who paint the face of infinite benevolence with an eternal frown, read in the everlasting book, wide open to your view, the lesson it would teach. Its pictures are not in black and somber hues, but bright and glowing tints. Its music, save when ye drown it, is not in sighs and groans, but songs and cheerful sounds. Listen to the million voices, in the summer air, and find one dismal as your own. Remember, if ye can, the sense of hope and pleasure which every glad return of day awakens in the breast of all your kind who have not changed their nature, and learn some wisdom even from the witless, when their hearts are lifted up they know not why, by all the mirth and happiness it brings. The widow's breast was full of care, was laden heavily with secret dread and sorrow. But her boy's gaiety of heart gladdened her, and beguiled the long journey. Sometimes he would bid her lean upon his arm, and would keep beside her steadily for a short distance. But it was more his nature, to be rambling to and fro, and she better liked to see him free and happy, even than to have him near her, because she loved him better than herself. She had quitted the place to which they were traveling, directly after the event which had changed her whole existence, and for 22 years had never had courage to revisit it. It was her native village. How many recollections crowded on her mind, when it appeared in sight. 22 years. Her boy's whole life and history. The last time she looked back upon those roofs among the trees, she carried him in her arms, an infant. How often since that time had she sat beside him night and day, watching for the dawn of mind that never came. How had she feared, and doubted, and yet hoped, long after conviction forced itself upon her. The little stratagems she had devised to try him, the little tokens he had given in his childish way not of dullness, but of something infinitely worse, so ghastly and unchildlike in its cunning came back as vividly as if, but yesterday had intervened. The room in which they used to be, the spot in which his cradle stood, he, old and elfin-like in face, but ever dear to her, gazing at her with a wild and vacant eye, and crooning some uncouth song as she sat by and rocked him. Every circumstance of his infancy came thronging back, and the most trivial, perhaps, the most distinctly. His older childhood too, the strange imaginings he had, His terror of certain senseless things, familiar objects he endowed with life, the slow and gradual breaking out of that one horror, in which, before his birth, his darkened intellect began. How, in the midst of all, she had found some hope and comfort in his being unlike another child, and had gone on almost believing in the slow development of his mind until he grew a man, and then his childhood was complete and lasting. One after another, all these old thoughts sprung up within her, strong after their long slumber and bitterer than ever. She took his arm, and they hurried through the village street. It was the same as it was wont to be in old times, yet different too, and wore another air. The change was in herself, not it, but she never thought of that, and wondered at its alteration, and where it lay, and what it was. The people all knew Barnaby, and the children of the place came flocking round him as she remembered to have done with their fathers and mothers round some silly beggar man, when a child herself. None of them knew her. They passed each well-remembered house, and yard, and homestead, and striking into the fields, were soon alone again. The warren was the end of their journey. Mr. Airedale was walking in the garden, and seeing them as they passed the iron gate, unlocked it, and bade them enter that way. At length you have mustered heart, to visit the old place, apostrophe he said to the widow. I am glad you have. Apostrophe, for the first time, and the last, sir, apostrophe she replied. The first for many years, but not the last? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the very last. Apostrophe, you mean, apostrophe said Mr. Airedale, regarding her with some surprise, that having made this effort, you are resolved not to persevere, and are determined to relapse? This is unworthy of you. I have often told you, you should return here. You would be happier here than elsewhere, I know. As to Barnaby, it's quite his home. Apostrophe, and grips, apostrophe said Barnaby, holding the basket open. The raven hopped gravely out, and perching on his shoulder and addressing himself to Mr. Airedale, cried as a hint, perhaps, that some temperate refreshment would be acceptable. Polly put the kettle on, we'll all have tea. Apostrophe, apostrophe, hear me, Mary, apostrophe said Mr. Airedale kindly, as he motioned her to walk with him towards the house. Your life has been an example of patience and fortitude, except in this one particular which has often given me great pain. It is enough to know that you were cruelly involved in the calamity which deprived me of an only brother, and Emma of her father, without being obliged to suppose, as I sometimes am, that you associate us with the author of our joint misfortunes. Apostrophe, associate you with him, sir. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she cried. Indeed, apostrophe said Mr. Airedale, I think you do. I almost believe that, because your husband was bound by so many ties to our relation, and died in his service and defense, you have come in some sort to connect us with his murder. Apostrophe, alas. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she answered. You little know my heart, sir. You little know the truth. Apostrophe, apostrophe, it is natural you should do so. It is very probable you may, without being conscious of it, apostrophe said Mr. Airedale, speaking more to himself than her. We are a fallen house. Money, dispensed with the most lavish hand, would be a poor recompense for sufferings like yours, and thinly scattered by hands so pinched and tight as ours, it becomes a miserable mockery. I feel it so, God knows, apostrophe he added, hastily. Why should I wonder if she does? Apostrophe, you do me wrong, dear sir, indeed, apostrophe she rejoined with great earnestness. And yet when you come to hear what I desire your leave, to say apostrophe, I shall find my doubts confirmed. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he said, observing that she faltered and became confused. Well, apostrophe, he quickened his pace for a few steps, but fell back again to her side, and said, And have you come all this way at last, solely to speak to me? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she answered, yes. Apostrophe, a curse, apostrophe, he muttered, upon the wretched state of us proud beggars, from whom the poor and rich are equally at a distance. the one being forced to treat us with a show of cold respect, the other condescending to us in their every deed and word, and keeping more aloof, the nearer they approach us. Why, if it were pain to you, as it must have been, to break for this slight purpose the chain of habit forged through 22 years, could you not let me know your wish, and beg me to come to you? There was not time, sir, she rejoined. I took my resolution but last night, and taking it, felt that I must not lose a day, an hour in having speech with you. They had by this time reached the house. Mr. Airedale paused for a moment, and looked at her, as if surprised by the energy of her manner. Observing, however, that she took no heed of him, but glanced up, shuddering, at the old walls with which such horrors were connected in her mind, he led her by a private stair into his library, where Emma was seated in a window, reading. The young lady, seeing who approached, hastily rose and laid aside her book, and with many kind words, and not without tears, gave her a warm and earnest welcome. But the widow shrunk from her embrace, as though she feared her, and sunk down trembling on a chair. It is the return to this place after so long an absence, said Emma gently. Pray ring, dear Uncle Erskine Barnaby will run himself, and ask for wine, not for the world, she cried. It would have another taste, I could not touch it. I want but a minute's rest. Nothing but that. Miss Airedale stood beside her chair, regarding her with silent pity. She remained for a little time quite still, then rose and turned to Mr. Airedale, who had sat down in his easy chair, and was contemplating her with fixed attention. The tale connected with the mansion borne in mind, it seemed, as has been already said, the chosen theater for such a deed as it had known. The room in which this group were now assembled hard by the very chamber, where the act was done dull, dark, and somber, heavy with worm-eaten books, deadened and shut in by faded hangings, muffling every sound, shadowed mournfully by trees whose rustling boughs gave ever, and anon a spectral knocking at the glass, wore, beyond all others in the house, a ghostly gloomy air. Nor were the group assembled there, unfitting tenants of the spot. The widow, with her marked and startling face and downcast eyes, Mr. Airedale stern and despondent ever, his niece beside him, like, yet most unlike, the picture of her father, which gazed reproachfully down upon them from the blackened wall, Barnaby, with his vacant look and restless eye, were all in keeping with the place, and actors in the legend. Nay, the very raven, who had hopped upon the table, and with the air of some old necromancer appeared to be profoundly studying a great folio volume that lay open on a desk, was strictly in unison with the rest, and looked like the embodied spirit of evil biding his time of mischief. I scarcely know, said the widow, breaking silence, how to begin. You will think my mind disordered. The whole tenor of your quiet and reproachless life, since you were last here, returned Mr. Airedale, mildly, shall bear witness for you. Why do you fear to awaken such a suspicion? You do not speak to strangers. You have not to claim our interest, or consideration for the first time. Be more yourself. Take heart. Any advice or assistance that I can give you, you know is yours of right, and freely yours. What if I came, sir, she rejoined, I who have but one other friend on earth, to reject your aid from this moment, and to say that henceforth I launch myself upon the world, alone and unassisted, to sink or swim as heaven may decree. You would have, if you came to me for such a purpose, said Mr. Airedale calmly, some reason to assign for conduct so extraordinary, which if one may entertain the possibility of anything so wild and strange would have its weight, of course. That, sir, she answered, is the misery of my distress. I can give no reason whatever. My own bare word is all that I can offer. It is my duty, my imperative and bounden duty. If I did not discharge it, I should be a base and guilty wretch. Having said that, my lips are sealed, and I can say no more. Apostrophe, as though she felt relieved at having said so much, and had nerved herself to the remainder of her task, she spoke from this time with a firmer voice and heightened courage. Heaven is my witness, as my own heart is and yours, dear young lady, will speak for me. I know that I have lived, since that time we all have bitter reason to remember, in unchanging devotion and gratitude to this family. Heaven is my witness, that go where I may, I shall preserve those feelings unimpaired. And it is my witness too, that they alone impel me to the course I must take, and from which nothing now shall turn me, as I hope for mercy. Apostrophe, these are strange riddles, apostrophe, said Mr. Airedale. In this world, sir, apostrophe, she replied, they may, perhaps, never be explained. In another, the truth will be discovered in its own good time. And may that time, apostrophe, she added in a low voice, be far distant. Apostrophe, apostrophe, let me be sure, apostrophe, said Mr. Airedale, that I understand you, for I am doubtful of my own senses. Do you mean, that you are resolved voluntarily, to deprive yourself of those means of support you have received from us so long, that you are determined to resign the annuity we settled on you 20 years ago to leave house, and home, and goods, and begin life anew and this, for some secret reason or monstrous fancy which is incapable of explanation, which only now exists, and has been dormant all this time. In the name of God, under what delusion are you laboring? Apostrophe, apostrophe, as I am deeply thankful, apostrophe, she made answer, for the kindness of those, alive and dead, who have owned this house, and as I would not have its roof fall down and crush me, or its very walls drip blood, my name being spoken in their hearing, I never will again subsist upon their bounty, or let it help me to subsistence. You do not know, apostrophe, she added, suddenly, to what uses it may be applied. Into what hands it may pass. I do, and I renounce it. Apostrophe, surely, apostrophe, said Mr. Airedale, its uses rest with you. Apostrophe, they did. They rest with me no longer. It may be it is devoted to purposes that mock the dead in their graves. It never can prosper with me. It will bring some other heavy judgment on the head of my dear son, whose innocence will suffer for his mother's guilt. Apostrophe, Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.